Hello and shalom. Welcome to this episode of Image Bearers Radio. I'm your host, Joe Amon. We got a great show ahead, so buckle up and hang on. Here we go. Hey, shalom, shalom, everybody. Welcome to episode 164 of Image Bearers Radio. I am your host, Joe Amon, coming to you all the way from the lovely Southwest Louisiana and Out of Ashes Ministries. I hope you guys are doing fantastic. It is great to be with you this week, and just hope everything is going well. Wherever you are in the nation, wherever you are in the world, whatever's going on with you, your family, personally, all the things, I hope everything's going well. I hope the Father is showing you some awesome things as we leave Sukkot and the high festival days, the high holy days, and fall into kind of a time where there's not a lot going on in the biblical calendar. We're starting the Parsha cycle over again, and things are smoothing out a little bit as we look forward to Hanukkah and Purim and then Passover before you know it. Anyway, getting way ahead of myself. So glad to be here with you guys and gals all today. So, hey, if it's your first time checking out Image Bearers Radio, just let me give you a really quick down and dirty. This is part of Out of Ashes Ministries, which is located in DeRidder, Louisiana, Southwest Louisiana. And this is something we get to do. Image Bearers Radio is something we get to do on Hebrew Nation Online, plays live there every week, several times a week. And then we turn it into a podcast, and it's a lot of fun to we post it on our website and YouTube and all over the place, and Apple, iTunes, podcast, and Google Play, all the different places. And so this is just my way of kind of connecting with you guys, not on Shabbat, and just talking about one of my greatest passions, and that is, How do we become better image bearers? That's really the whole thing. In Genesis, it says that God made us in his image. So how do we do that better? And so that's what this radio show, this podcast is all about, is exploring that whole deal. So again, if you're new to the podcast and to the ministry, I want to invite you to check us out on Shabbat. Join us for Shabbat service. We live stream every Shabbat at 10 a.m. We live stream to our website. We have a mobile app you can check out, also to Facebook and to YouTube. Or if you're local to the area, come by and hang out. We'd love to see you. That's at 10 a.m. Central. And then we always upload the teaching portion later on. We have the Parsha being read, we have worship, we have teaching, stuff for the kids. It's fantastic. For those of you guys who are vets of either OAM or IBR, you've been around for a long time, thank you guys for being family, for being great supporters, for sharing these episodes, and for, you know, helping us get the word out about what Hashem is doing. And we are so thankful to you for just being awesome. Thank you for the prayers and the support and all the things. Lastly, if anybody feels like they would like to give and support IBR, that would be a great blessing. I know several of you, many of you give and support either monthly or a couple times a year, or some of you give every week. Thank you, guys. You can go to our website, outofashesministries.org/give, and you can donate there. It'd be a great, great help, and we really, really would appreciate it. All right, so what are we doing this week? Well, as you know, last week we finished up our discussion on the Talmud, the Mishnah, what we call the Oral Torah. And so I hope that was good and helpful for you guys. This week, what I've decided to do is again continue to follow what we've done on Shabbat in what we call a series we call the Mitzvah Project. And so today we're going to start talking about Shabbat, but not just quite yet. There's some intro that I want to do before we get into Shabbat, and we'll talk about that as we kind of get into it. But before we do that, as is our custom here, let us go to the Father, just ask his blessings on our time together. Avinu Malkinu, our Father and King, we are thankful for this time we get together to discuss you, to talk about how to reflect you better in our world, how to show people who you are. And so we pray, God, that you give us wisdom, you give us strength and direction as we love you more and more. Through Yeshua, our Messiah, amen and amen. All right, everybody. So we are, or have been, just kind of a quick recap, since not this Sukkot, but last year's Sukkot, we have at OAM, we've kind of been on a journey to increase our observance in the commandments. And you may say, well, like, why is that a big deal? It's not a big deal. There's, you know, differing opinions and stuff on that, and that's all cool. But for us, for OAM, the reason why I think it's a big deal is because we believe that the Torah is the constitution. It's the culture. It's the lifestyle that our Messiah lived by. Right? He was a Jew of Jews. He was an Israelite in the first century, and the Torah is the lifeblood. It's everything for the nation of Israel. And so, in our attempt to be more like Messiah and to learn more about who He truly is and what He teaches us about the Father and about the kingdom and about life with God, we believe that a better understanding and adherence to the Torah and the commandments gives us more insight, right? And so it's not for us just about learning more about the commandments. It's actually about doing them better so that we have a real tactile and experiential learning and understanding and journey within the Torah and within learning. And I think that's super important because we can really struggle with ideas that are only, you know, mental, cerebral, unless we have like a way to act them. And I think that's the beauty and the one of the purposes of the Torah, honestly, is not for just God to drop knowledge, right, on the nation of Israel at Sinai. It wasn't just to give them a bunch of rules and laws just for knowledge's sake. Like, okay, you know these things, but there's an action tied to every one of the mitzvot, the commandments. And so it's a really important that action is that we don't just go, oh, I understand the concept of these commandments, but that we also do our best to live out the action as best we can. And this is where it can kind of get sticky. It's easy to, you know, to study some commandments, to study the parsha and go, oh, yeah, I get the gist and move on. It's another thing to try to implement these things into our lives. And it's difficult because for a lot of reasons that we'll end up talking about. But one of the main reasons that we have spent time talking about the Sanhedrin, and then we spent time talking about the Oral Torah, is because especially as non-Jews, we are at a disadvantage when it comes to how do we live out the Torah better. And understand, I want to take my time to share my heart with you guys. Understand that where I'm coming from when we talk about these things. This is not an attempt to be Jewish. This is not an attempt to take away from the Jewish people anything that is theirs. It's not, and if anything, it's quite the opposite, to actually look to the Jewish people to model halakha and living out the Torah. But it's not an attempt to be, you know, pseudo-Jewish or whatever. I really honestly feel sincerely that if we call ourselves, you know, believers in, followers of the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob through Yeshua the Messiah, even though we're of the nations, while we may not be held to the strictest sense of Torah keeping, right? This is one of the Jewish arguments, and one of the arguments for a lot of Christians actually go, well, yeah, but we're not accountable to those things. You know, you tell a Jewish person, oh, well, like, I'm trying to keep Shabbat, you know, I'm trying to keep the Torah, and they'd be like, why are you doing that, right? It's not about that, and we may not even be held to that standard, honestly. But for those of us that feel this fulfillment and this sense of obligation and accountability to keeping the Torah because of being made a part of the commonwealth, greater commonwealth of Israel, the covenant through Yeshua, then it's impertinent and it's important to us that we do that carefully and we do that well, whatever that looks like. And so for some people, it may look like reading the Torah and, you know, determining like, okay, well, we're going to be talking about Shabbat, so let's talk about Shabbat. But we're going to be we're going to be looking at, you know, what are the commandments of Shabbat and how do I do those things? And for some people, it may look like, well, I don't really know what some of these things mean, so I will just do them the best that I can of what I understand. And that's a great place to start, and it's a great place to be if that's all that you feel like you're being pulled towards. But as you start doing, you know, more and more of the Torah, there are going to be more questions about how things are done, how were they done, how should we do them, you know, how far should we go, how far do we need to go, et cetera, and all these things. And that's part of what I want this conversation to be about. You know, as non-Jewish Torah people, believers, followers, whatever, we are in a really unique position, and we're not the only ones to ever be in this position, and we're not the first, we're not going to be the last, obviously, where we are, you know, we have kind of an identity issue. And that's way at the beginning, if you'll go back to the beginning of this What Do You Want series, way at the beginning, we spent a lot of time talking about identity. And how we identify, and how we where do we get our who you are from, and what shapes that, and if we want to change that, or if we want to look in different ways, how do we navigate that? And so we spent a lot of time talking about that because I believe with all of my heart that identity is the foundation of everything. It determines how you see yourself and how you interact with yourself, your own thoughts and desires, how you judge yourself or love yourself, and how you care for yourself or neglect yourself, how you honor and praise yourself or abuse yourself. That's all an identity thing. Now, sometimes those identities are shaped by external forces, right? They're by parents or family or abusers or people that treated us really well, and all both ends of the spectrum and all in between. But ultimately, it settles within us. No matter what somebody called you or did to you or how they, neglected you or whatever, it ultimately comes into you. You have the choice. You have the ultimate freedom to decide who you are, who you're going to be, and what path and what area of life, what direction you are going to pursue. You have the ability to do that. People that have recovered from addiction, from serious trauma, they will tell you that they can't, you can make it out. You can make it out. You can pull yourself up by the bootstraps. You can embrace healing and restoration and recovery, and you can make it out. You can do those things, but it has to be a decision that you make. You can get help. You can get therapy. You can get prayer. You can get, accountability and all those things, but ultimately it rests in you. So identity is a huge deal. And so what we find as non-Torah or non-Jewish Torah, believers, is that we're not Jewish. And the more you learn about Judaism and the family of Israel and the nation of the Jews and the cultures that are intermingled and the diversity and all the things, you realize how much of a different world Judaism is than the way that most of us process life. Culturally, there's language and there's food and there's music and there are things that make you realize like, oh, this is not me. I love it maybe, and I may be really drawn to it, and I may be really appreciative of its beauty, but it's not me. It's not how I grew up. I don't understand the music. I don't understand some of the customs. I don't understand some of these things. And while I may have a desire to embrace them and want to, we just have to face the fact that we don't live in a Jewish home, in a Jewish community. And when we think about our parents and grandparents, they weren't rabbis and, or they weren't, Shomer Shabbat. They weren't all of these things, keepers of the Sabbath. And that's a real and honest assessment of who we are and who we're not. And that's okay. We haven't grown up with a legacy of how to do Shabbat and what it means to have our internal rhythm usually centers around Christmas and Easter and Thanksgiving and those holidays. And that's not something to be ashamed of. That just is what it is. That's just reality. that is our internal clock because that's the culture that we grew up in. And so one of the reasons why, just as an aside, you know, if it's hard for you to kind of give up Christmas to break away from the season, now you may understand that, you know, Yeshua probably wasn't born on December 25th. And that's not when we, you know, we're going to celebrate him, and that's fine. And that's one thing. But it's a whole nother animal to you know, I think sometimes we almost think that we should have a disdain for the season of Christmas. We should have a hatred for it, and we should have at least we should have a blasé attitude about, like, oh, it's Christmas, I had no idea. And the truth of the matter is that many, and I would say even most folks that give up celebrating Christmas to be more kind of true to the, you know, Hebraic calendar, the Jewish calendar, most people that give up celebrating Christmas still for years and maybe forever have this struggle with, like, yeah, but I just enjoy the lights and I enjoy the season and I enjoy the warmth and I enjoy the, you know, the memories and the things of, you know, growing up as a kid, or if your kids are old and, you know, older and out of the house, you remember having your kids and, you know, Christmas morning and the gifts and all that stuff. The fact is that for a lot of us, Christmas was not something that was super religious. Yeah, like, we, okay, with the birth of Yeshua, great, of Jesus, you know, whatever, and that's fine. But the thing that we love about Christmas really is the season, the warmth, the hot apple cider or whatever, the fire, you know, the lights, those kinds of things. And I just think, I know I'm stepping off in a whole hornet's nest, but I just think that, you know, we've been a little bit too hard on ourselves and on everybody else, where we haven't given ourselves time to go, like, okay, can I enjoy? I enjoy the fall, right? I love when that first kind of like crisp few mornings. Oh man, it just invigorates me. I love it. I hate the heat. And anyway, I live in South Louisiana. Go figure. But I love that first little bit of fall, right? That and the leaves start changing. Of course, here it's Louisiana. It's the middle of November, and it's still in the 80s here. So for all of my folks in Colorado, Washington, Alaska, all of you guys are like, we've gotten a foot of snow already. Yeah. No, I'm thankful you guys are experiencing that. But here we're still in shorts, right? And so for Thanksgiving, we'll be in shorts and short sleeves. That's fine. But I love the beginning of fall. Now, it makes me very comforted. I emotionally, I love it. Does that wrong? You know, for some people, they love the spring, and once the cold weather's finally over and those first few warm days and the budding of, you know, the trees and the flowers, like, oh, it's almost a religious experience. Is that wrong? No. So why do we have such a militant view of the winter season, right? And Christmas time. And so I want to just throw that out, as if anybody's listening to this and this season, since we're approaching Thanksgiving and the Christmas season, if anybody has struggled with that, I want to just maybe give you a little lifeline, give you a little bit of hope and say, you know, you don't have to hate Christmas. You don't have to hate the season. You don't have to hate the memories of, you know, of being a kid or your kids. You don't have to hate Christmas lights. You don't have to hate Christmas trees, God forbid. You know, we take that passage in Jeremiah about bringing in trees and donning them with silver. God, that's Christmas. Well, Christmas wasn't a thing then. And you go, yeah, but it's still pagan worship and it's idolatry and blah, blah, blah. And like, I mean, okay, if you ever worshiped your tree, then I guess it's idolatry for you. I never worshiped the tree. You go, yeah, but you bow down to it when you get your presents. What? and listen, I used to teach all these things, so I was very militant, you know, myself at one point, and I've just gotten to where it just doesn't seem like that big of a deal. It's not a big enough deal, rather, that we should be super militant and belligerent about it, where we hurt other people over the fact. And let me say this, where you hurt yourself over the facts. So you know what? Wherever you fall on the spectrum, if you've completely given it up and all the things and you're completely disconnected from this season, fine. But if you have a little bit of struggle disconnecting and all, know that that's okay. And I ultimately think, you know, how does God want us to think about this? What does God expect from us? Because here's where my mind goes on this. God did not give us, you and I, most likely, I'll say me. God did not give me to Jewish parents. I was not born in a Jewish home. And when I say a Jewish home, I mean a home where, you know, the Torah is done and synagogue and that world, a Torah-keeping world. I didn't grow up in that. I didn't grow up with the rich history and culture of, you know, being people of the Torah. And so God knew that, and that was by God's design. If I believe that God, you know, knew me before he stitched me in my mother's womb, et cetera, and all those things that we say we believe, if he knew that, he knew the parents I was going to be born to. He knew the culture I was going to be. Listen, I'm born into Cajun culture, which means we eat everything, right? We drink, we dance, we party. It's kind of a wild thing, it's kind of everything in the Torah that you're not supposed to do as a person of God. That's kind of what we do. And not with malicious intent. It's just our culture. God knew that. And God knew where he was going to put you when you were born. Now, do we think that our God is the type of God who would let us grow up our entire lives in a certain culture, enjoying certain memories, having beautiful, wonderful experiences with loving parents and families and friend, you know, circles and all these things? Do we believe that God would allow us all of those things only at one point in our life to show us the Torah, to wake us up to the Torah, and then all of a sudden, he expects us to forsake all of that for it to just be uprooted from our very identity, just to be changed in the twinkling of an eye? And if we have trouble disconnecting ourselves from some of those things, that God holds us accountable and is like, oh, well, you should. How dare you still love Christmas? I don't know. I think that's a bridge too far for me to think of God in that way. I don't even know if God expects us to hate those things in our past. I mean, I'll be honest with you. You know, my mom is suffering with dementia, and she's in a nursing home now. And my mom made the best fried shrimp you've ever tasted in your life. Do I miss that? Yeah. Yeah, I do. Does that make me sinful? Maybe in your eyes. Does God expect me to hate that part of my life? And does he expect me to have guilt and shame because I remember and I'm fond of mom's fried shrimp? I don't know. Maybe so. But what I do know is I have lived under that mindset, where I have to be ashamed of everything in my past. I have to be ashamed that I used to eat pork. I have to be ashamed that I used to, you know, celebrate Christmas and Easter. I have to be ashamed that I used to sit in Sunday church, that I used to raise my hands in worship, that I used to dance and run around the church, that I used to preach. I used to preach some of the very things that I don't believe anymore. I have lived with that mindset, that torture of having to be ashamed of those things, and to try to disconnect from those things, like that's not the reality of who I was and how I grew up. And I just don't buy it. It's toxic and it hurts. And I'm not there anymore. And so if you're in that position, if you're in that space, just please know that this is a journey that you can work your way out of. You can progress, and you will progress if you don't give up. So as we finish up this segment, we come back. Next segment, we're going to start actually talking about how we're going to talk about the mitzvot. So, hey, don't go away. We'll be right back right after the break. All right, everybody, welcome back to the second segment and episode 164 of Image Bearers Radio. Thank you guys for coming back. So we are, forgive that little rant in the first segment, but I think it's really important to talk about these identity things because, again, as I said, I believe that is the foundation of everything. And so it goes a lot to identity, and that is a constant process that we're constantly working out. So what I have to do for me personally, and you fit this to your situation, is I have to be comfortable being a Cajun, a Kunas. For those of you that don't know, that's what we call ourselves. It's not derogatory. It's a thing. I have to be comfortable being a, growing up a pork, shrimp, crawfish, eating, blah, 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 whatever, Cajun, and go like, you know what? God knew that part. He knew what I was going to be, and he also knew that at some point he was going to open my eyes to his Torah, which is in a lot of ways diametrically opposed to the way I grew up, and God gives me the grace for that transition period. God gives me the grace to transition, to hold on to those beautiful memories and yet not live that way anymore. You can do both. You can appreciate your background and live in a new way. So, all right, as we move forward, one of the ways that we move forward and as that we transition, into the person that God is trying to create us to be, that growing up in the stature of Messiah, one of the ways that we do that, as I said at the beginning, is a more thorough and better implementing of the commandments in our everyday lives, okay? So we are going to start talking about Shabbat. Because I believe Shabbat is kind of it's the hub, it's the center, it's the way that many people, most people I would say, probably come into an understanding of Torah. But before we get to the Shabbat, I want to talk about just some elementary and fundamental things that you may or may not know about or have understood, and things like that. So can I kind of give you some background stuff before we jump into looking at the commandments. So first of all, when we talk about the Torah, the commandments, right, it can be overwhelming. And especially if you're newer to the Torah walk, it can be super overwhelming. And there's a good chance that, you're still working through a lot of the things that you were taught in church and stuff about what the law is, what the Torah is, how much of it there are, for instance, nobody could ever keep all those laws, right? Statements like that we all kind of grew up with in church. There was no way, a human can keep all those laws. And we go, well, like all those laws, how many laws are there? And what does that look like? Right. So we think about, like, one of the ways that I like to think about this is, I did a recent Google search for this. You can do this. It's a fun little experiment. If you have some time, you're just noodling around on your phone. How many criminal and civil laws, federal civil laws and criminal laws are there in America? How many laws are on the books? And several years ago, I had done this, and I think I saw a number like 7 million is what was thought to be the number, 7 million. I don't remember that source, so I can't pull it for you, sadly enough, but we have these laws, we have so many laws on the books. I think I looked at it again a couple weeks ago, and it's like nobody even knows. the couple of different sources I read, which were like judicial websites and stuff, legal websites, were like, we don't really know how many laws there are on the books federally. That's not even state and local. How many laws are there? But as an American citizen, do you wake up every morning and think about the laws? Think about what? No. Probably not. I mean, I guess, unless you're a law student, then awesome. but we don't. What laws do you think about on a daily basis? Probably the only laws you ever really think about are traffic laws. Why? Because if you drive, then you come to a stop sign, it probably crosses your mind, full stop. and then go, or something like that, right? You're driving through town and you notice a speed limit change, or you're driving into town or out and you notice the speed, and you, but you're not even thinking about the laws and how they work and should I obey or how should, what, you know, you just like, okay, it is what it is, right? And so with all the laws that we have governing our society in America, we don't really think consciously about all the laws and all the things. We know how to be legal citizens, right? And we just go do our thing. We live our lives. And you go, well, like, man, that American is really American. And the question is, how do we talk about people that are like, oh man, they're really American? What makes somebody really American over somebody else? How strictly they obey the laws? I would say no. What makes someone really American as compared to other people is that they embody what we consider the best values of what America is. And so this whole thing is the idea that we, you know, somebody that's a really good driver, they really took seriously their driver training, their, you know, understanding the traffic laws and traffic, you know, how to navigate and how to, you know, how to be courteous and all those kinds of, they took that stuff seriously and it develops them into a good driver. Most people are not just good drivers just to begin with. You have to be taught to do that. But after you are taught for a length of time and you experience it and you work on your skills, you don't think about it. That stuff just runs in the background, right? And so it's the same way with the commandments. Most of us embody the kingdom ethic, which means that we are righteous as much as we know how to be and can be. It means that we are giving and generous to those around us. We help those that are needy. It means that we have a profound respect and surrender for the God of creation, right? The one God of creation. Most of us have that ethic already because we have been taught. The question is, for those areas in our lives where we feel like we need to bring them up or we need to do better, we need to find some new life, you know, in some new direction, how do we do that? And that's where we have to go back. We have to relearn those legal parts, we have to relearn those basic techniques and those basic things so that it can produce new life in us somewhere else. So that's how we're going to talk about and look at like Shabbat and some of these kinds of things. So when we talk about the commandments and all of this thing, the first thing I want to encourage you is don't get overwhelmed, okay? Don't get overwhelmed. We're going to start with Shabbat, and we're going to kind of take a systematic look at Shabbat and how it works out and how we can learn more about it in a way that's non-threatening and not scary and hopefully not too overwhelming, okay? So first of all, in the rabbinic understanding, okay, the rabbinic understanding, there are 613 commandments in the Torah. And you can read a lot about this. You can, you know, figure out how they figured it out and all these kinds of things. But that group of 613 commandments in Hebrew is called Taryag Mitzvot. That's Taryag Mitzvot. I'm sorry, Mitzvot. Taryag Mitzvot. Okay. And Taryag Mitzvot is the reason why it's called that is because in Hebrew, each letter has a, you know, a sound, of course, but each letter also has a numerical value. It's something called gematria. Gematria assigns a numeric value to each letter. So Aleph is the first letter of the Hebrew Aleph Beit. It has the value of 1. Beit is the second, has the value of 2, and it goes up to 10, and then it goes on from there. And so the word Taryag, the letters in that word equal 613. And so it's called Taryag Mitzvot. So if you joined us last week for last week's episode, we looked at the website Safaria.org. And I'm going to go back to Safaria because I want to show you guys a source where you can you can find this stuff. And I wanted it to be, you know, kind of, I want you to have a heads up. So we're going to go actually into the Babylonian Talmud. So we're here on the homepage. We're going to go down to the second to Talmud. Okay. And you see up here at the top, it says Babylonian and Jerusalem. We're going to be in the Babylonian Talmud. And we're going to be in Makot. Okay. Makot. So here are our Sederim, right? So here's Zeraim. We talked about that in the Mishnah last week. We didn't really look at the Talmud. And then here is Seder Moed, right, with all of the holidays. And then here is Seder Nashim, our family law. Then we go down. Here's Nezakin. And here we find Makot, okay? So we go into Makot. And we're going to go into Makot 23b. By the way, the reason why you know, if a source is ever given and it just says, you know, it says in Makot 23b, and it doesn't tell you whether it's Talmud or Mishnah, you know it's the Babylonian Talmud, because the Babylonian Talmud will give the Seder, or, you know, or the tractate, Makot, but it'll also have an A or B afterwards. And that's where you know. So we're going to go into 23b. Okay, let me switch this up here to just English so it's a little bit bigger. Okay, and we're going to go all the way down, all the way down. All right, let's see. My thing's not working. Okay, here we go. So 23b, and it says here in chapter or in paragraph 18, it says, right here, there were 613 mitzvot stated to Moshe in the Torah, consisting of 365 prohibitions, that means thou shalt not, corresponding to the number of days in the solar year, and 248 positive mitzvot, which means thou shalt, corresponding to the number of a person's limbs. Rav Hamnuna said, what is the verse that alludes to this? It is written, Moshe commanded to us the Torah, an inheritance of the congregation of Yaakov. That's in Deuteronomy 33:4. The word Torah, in terms of its numerical value, gematria, which we just talked about, is 611, the number of mitzvot that were received and taught by Moshe, our teacher. In addition, there are two mitzvot, one in Exodus chapter 20, which says, I am the Lord your God. And then in the next verse, it says, you have no other gods. The first two of the Ten Commandments that we heard from the mouth of the Almighty for a total of 613. The Gemara, which is the discussion on the Mishnah we talked about, provides a mnemonic for the biblical figure cited in the course of discussion that follows. And so this goes down to more discussion. But I wanted you to see in the Talmud itself where this idea of Tarayag Mitzvot and the 613 comes from. Now, so the idea is that there's 611, right? And then there's two extra, one which we wouldn't even see as a commandment, but that the Jewish people, the sages, counted as a commandment, which is, I am the Lord your God. That's a commandment or a teaching for them. And then have no other gods, which are extra two, which gives us 613, okay? Now, here's the thing. Do you have to agree with that counting? No, doesn't matter, okay? Doesn't matter. You may go through the Torah, and if you, I would say this, if you want to be so vehement and push back against, well, the Jews say there's 630, you want to be a butthole about it, then I would invite you to take on the project of going through and counting the commandments for yourself. I bet you won't do it because it's hard. It takes time, right? It's hard. What about a repeated commandment? What about a commandment given, the same commandment given at a different time? What about a commandment that is stated and then its details are stated? Are those separate commandments or are those the same? There's a lot of ways to count the commandments. You may count them and come up with like, well, there's really like 27 commandments altogether. You might come out with 2,748 and a half. It doesn't matter. The reason why we're learning Tarayag Mitzvot, and that's about the 613 commandments, is I'm not trying to be like, you know, I'm not trying to be militaristic about, yes, there are 613. It is a system that allows us to work from. It's a way of taking all the mitzvot and categorizing them and organizing them. And that's what's important about this. That's what I want you to take away from this, is that there's a categorization. The sages, the Jewish people, accepted a counting of 613 with 365 positives and 200 some odd negatives, and said, okay, this is the template we're going to work off of, okay? Again, this is the most traditional and foundational understanding about the number of commandments found in the Torah. It's not about agreeing or disagreeing. Nobody cares. Just understand the system. And again, if you want to be that, you know, that nutty about it, then go and count them for yourself. It'd be a great project. I'm honestly saying that. Okay. So there is a great sage in Judaism named Rambam, R-A-M-B-A-M, also known as Maimonides. He puts together really the best and most widely used categorization of the commandments in a source called Sefer HaMitzvot, the Book of Commandments. Sefer is book, and mitzvot, of course, commandments. Sefer HaMitzvot, the Book of Commandments. And it's the most famous, most popular, most authoritative among the Jewish people. So let's go back to Safaria, and I want to show you, if you're using Safaria as a source, where to get this. So again, we're back on the homepage, the landing page, and we're talking about keeping the commandments, right? So we're going to be talking about halakha, the walking. So we go to this halakha tab here, okay? And you see all of these, Mishnei Torah, Shulchan Aruch. We'll talk about some of these as we go later. But let's scroll down a little bit further, okay? And we have this Sifrei Mitzvot, okay? Works enumerating the commandments in light of the Talmudic tradition, etc. We have Sefer HaChinuch, which we'll be looking at also. And then here we go, Sefer HaMitzvot here. Maimonides' 12th century list of the 630 commandments with brief descriptions originally written in Arabic. And so if we go through here it is right at the top, Sefer HaMitzvot, and he give the translator's introduction, Rambam's introduction, which is really, really neat to read. And so again, this is just kind of a look into how the Jewish people understand and have categorized the Torah. Again, we don't have to recreate the wheel. Okay, I know a lot of our issues come from, well, can we trust this? Because we were lied to, we felt like we were lied to, we felt like we were done wrong by men and tradition in our past. And so the last thing we want to do is follow somebody else's tradition. Like, nope, been there, done that, got the t-shirt, got burned out, blah, 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 whatever. I'm not listening to any other man's tradition. But what I want to encourage you to do is realize, like, we don't have to recreate the wheel. You can still look at and use Jewish writings without being like, you don't have to go like, oh, all of this should have been the Bible, for God's sakes. It's all so true. It doesn't have to be like that. You don't have to have like this, you know, complete allegiance to what you read from the Jewish writings. What you can do is understand, like, okay, when we're talking about Sefer HaMitzvot, when we're talking about Taryag Mitzvot, what we're doing is we're looking at their system of organizing and understanding the commandments. Okay, cool. I don't have to like love it with all my heart, mind, and strength, right? It's not Hashem, right? It's not Yeshua. It's a system of understanding. Cool. Okay. Hopefully that helps a little bit. And so Rambam, let's talk about kind of how these commandments and mitzvot are ordered, because here's the deal. I want you to be able to go. I want to give you, after we work through Shabbat, I want you to be able to come across a commandment in the Parsha that you're reading and go, I wonder about that commandment. Oh, I know some places I can go to learn some traditional Jewish understandings on it, and then I can go from there, right? It's great. So Rambam's, the way he numbers and categorizes, orders the commandments in Sefer HaMitzvot is done by category and not by chronology. So it's done categorically and not chronologically, okay? It's important. So his numbering doesn't happen in the order in which it happens. So if you're trying to do it by the Parsha, I have another resource for you that will be more helpful. And also within Rambam's ordering, there are subcategories in the commandments. So he gives you the thou shalt's, right? The positives that we talked about as performative, and those are called mitzvot aseh, you know, commandments to do. And then there are the negatives, which are mitzvot lo ta'aseh, which are, you know, the don't do's, right? Thou shalt not's. So if you're interested in doing and studying the commandments by Parsha, there's another great Jewish resource that I can show you. If we go back here in Sepharia, then I'll show you. We go back to Halakha, where we were, and we go down, and here we have Sefer HaChinuch. Now, Chinuch it's an anonymous work. And so the story is that whoever the author was, Chinuch, wrote this as a project for his teenage son, his young son, who was studying Torah with his friends, and he wanted to give his son and his friends something to study the commandments by, which I think is really cool. And by the way, Chinuch is a form of the name Chanoch, which is the biblical Enoch. So when you read Enoch in the Bible, his name is actually Chanoch, which also is similar to the word Chanukah, which is dedication, right? So so this is like the book of dedication, which is cool. And if we go into Sefer HaChinuch, you can see it's broken down by Parsha. And so here you have Parsha Bereshit, right? The commandment of procreation. You have Lech Lecha, the commandment to circumcise, okay? And then if you don't see a Parsha mentioned, it's because Chinuch did not identify any commandments in that Parsha. So that's a great, this is a great resource. We'll just look at this. So the commandment to procreate, see, here is Mitzvah 1 in his chronology, right? So what's important to understand is that these two resources are great. They're going to say similar things on most things, little different things on other things, but one is chronological, one is categorical, right? So it's important to remember that. The numberings are not going to be the same, okay? But the commandments will ultimately be the same. They have the same commandments listed. They're just not always going to be the same number. But it's a great way to just kind of systematically study the mitzvot by parsha, by category, etc., right? And so you can look at the parsha, you can go to Sefer HaChinuch, and you can look at all the commandments that he lists, and you can go over to Sefer HaMitzvot, to Rambam, you can find those commandments and read a little bit more about them. They're fantastic. There's a resource that I'll have for you guys next week that I'll actually show you. But Sefer HaChinuch, you can actually buy in book form. It's a beautifully done set. It's 10 volumes offered by Art Scroll. And you can have it in a paper version that's done, you know, along with your Parsha study if you choose to do like that. It's fantastic, fantastic, fantastic. That's just a kind of a basis on what are the commandments, how do you study them? Because it's one thing to have the conversation about, like, is the Torah valid and blah, 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 and have like an apologetic argument, right, with your friends and family. When you're trying to work it out yourself, when you're like super brand new to this whole Torah thing, it's one thing to argue the validity of the Torah, right? But for so many people, that's kind of where we live. We go like, oh yeah, the Torah's a thing. Now I'm going to spend the rest of my life arguing with everybody around me why the Torah is a thing, right? And I'm going to be like an apologetic crusader for, yes, we should keep the Torah. But how many times does that grow into, well, wait, if I believe we ought to keep the Torah, how good am I at doing it? And that's this version. That's this portion that I want to invite you guys into. This is where study really, becomes a big deal and becomes a main thing and becomes something that we really work towards. So welcome to this part of the journey into this series. I hope you guys find it really, really encouraging. And until next week, shalom, shalom. Love you guys.